Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, where tour players, legends, and the top instructors in the game share their stories, insights, and playing lessons. Join Chris every week as he talks with the greats of the game.
You are the smartest guy I've spoken to on radio or television in my career.
Chris, again, you're knocking out of the park. You're like 8 under par in this interview.
By having research, I'm hiring your tail to be the research, man. You're the best.
You're a fantastic host and tremendously respected in the golf community.
Yeah, Chris, you do an amazing job, and your listeners are super lucky to have you, and it's always my pleasure.
Chris Mascaro is the king of the golf podcast. Don't miss him on Tuesdays.
Now, here's your host, Chris Mascaro.
Good evening, folks, and thank you for joining me this week on Next on the Tee. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro. I hope your week is going really, really well for you. This week on the show, I've got some really great friends that I'm excited to share with you. In part one of the show, my first guest is going to be a lady who was recently given elite status as an LPGA instructor. She got that award earlier this year at the PGA Merchandise Show, and that's Cindy Miller. Please, go out onto our website, cindymillergolf.com, and check her out and subscribe to her YouTube channel. So much free content available for you there on her YouTube channel. Subscribe to it. Hit the bell, as they say, so you can get updates when she puts more things out there. With the tragic news this week about Grayson Murray, I wanted Cindy to come on the show to share the story of her husband, Alan Miller. Alan played and won on the PGA Tour in the 70s and early part of the 80s, played in 5 Masters tournaments, but like Grayson, he found himself in some dark places, tried to end his life one time. SiriusXM recently did an audio documentary on Alan's life, which you can listen to out on Cindy's YouTube channel. It's incredibly well done. Dave Marr narrates the show beautifully. Tonight you're going to hear the situation from Cindy's perspective about what Alan was going through and putting their family through. As Cindy and Alan, oh, by the way, are going to be driving down the road on the way to their next engagement. We'll get them both sort of on the show, if you will. That's coming up for you here in just a few minutes. Following Cindy, I'm going to be joined by former Atlanta Falcons wide receiver Brian Finneran. Brian has been a great friend over on our football show Thursday Night Tailgate, going all the way back to 2011. Tonight, I want to get Brian's thoughts on the Falcons draft and why the heck they took Michael Penix with the 8th overall pick. Makes absolutely zero sense to me after they signed Kirk Cousins to a 4-year, $180 million deal with $100 million of that guaranteed when they have so many other gaping holes that they needed to fill. We'll also talk about this. Angel Hernandez gave every baseball fan in the world a present this week by retiring. Want to get Finn's thoughts on that? Plus, he went over to Augusta National and got to play the golf course, so you know we got to hear that story. So very excited to have Brian back as part of the show. He'll join me about 25 minutes from now. Then in part two of this week's show, I'm going to be joined by Robert Morris University men's golf coach Steve Schindeldecker. He'll be back. He'll give us an update on how they finished out this season. And then we'll round things out with one of his high school teammates, who's now a top 100 instructor, our very good friend Eric Johnson. So you know there were some barbs flying back and forth between those two guys as one guy exited the show while the other guy was entering the show. We also talked to Eric about the U.S. Open. As we look ahead to next year's U.S. Open, which returns to Oakmont, they've made some changes to the golf course. I want to hear Eric's thoughts on that because, oh, by the way, he was fresh off the course earlier today, was out there playing with the owner of the Pittsburgh Brewing Company, a wonderful new sponsor of this show. Cliff Forrest was in a foursome with Eric, so we'll hear about what he thinks of the changes when he comes into the show. That's in segment two of part two of the show, so that's a little over an hour of content from now. So folks, I can't thank you enough as always for being a part of this week's show, so sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life. Folks, I couldn't be more excited to announce a new sponsor joining Next on the Tee, a product that I've literally known about my whole life and been drinking since I was 21 years old, of course, and that is the Pittsburgh Brewing Company and Iron City Beer. Whether you're a hacker or a scratcher, the secret to a successful day on the links is knowing when it's time to grab an iron, even if that means keeping it in the bag till the 19th hole. If it's been a while since you've reached for Pittsburgh staple beer, it's time to revisit Iron City. Thanks to their incredible new facility in Creighton, the best-tasting Iron City beer ever made is now available at a course near you. Iron City pairs well with any lye and sky and serves as a friendly reminder that there's always next round. Iron City beer, best enjoyed while enjoying life. Now let's talk about golf getaways and buddies trip locations. When you're thinking about that, think about our friends over at the Macklemore, which is a wonderful resort located just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee, high atop Lookout Mountain. It is a casual two-hour drive from Atlanta, Nashville, and Birmingham. The existing Highlands course is now ranked in the top 100 courses you can play in the U.S. by Golf Digest. The 18th hole is ranked in the top 10 finishing holes in the world. A second course, The Keep, is under construction and will open summer of 2024. The Keep is a Bill Bergen, Reese Jones design and features a mile and a half of dramatic cliff edge, with every inch of that edge filled up with a golf hole. A world-class hotel, Cloudland Lookout Mountain Curio Collection by Hilton, will open spring of 2024. Both have incredible views into historic Macklemore Cove, 1,200 feet below. You gotta see it to believe it, folks. Stay, dine, and play golf above the clouds at Macklemore. Go online to macklemore.com to book your stay and play package. Now let's talk about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade. From the very beginning, P790 irons have been rooted in clean aesthetics and thoughtful design. However, their true beauty is found beneath the surface. With AI-optimized weighting and speed foam air on the inside, every iron is uniquely designed to perform exactly how you need it to. As striking as they are on the outside, their true beauty lies within. Learn more about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade by checking out their website at TaylorMadeGolf.com. Okay, now back and making it an even dozen times with me here on Next on the Tee is one of my all-time favorite guests, who also happens to be the 2010 LPGA Teacher of the Year and a lady who was recognized by the LPGA as an elite-level teacher earlier this year during the PGA Merchandise Show, and that is Cindy Miller. Cindy continues to do such great things to help bring more people into our game, play better, and make golf a game for a lifetime. She is from Silver Creek, New York, which is about 45 miles southwest of Buffalo. She played her college golf as a walk-on, mind you, at the University of Miami. There she became an All-American her senior year. She served as team captain and helped Miami win back-to-back national championships in 1977 and 78. She won the New York State Amateur Championship also in 1978 and qualified for the LPGA Tour in 79. She played out there for a few years. She competed in 5 U.S. Opens. Golf Tips magazine has named her one of their top 25 instructors. In 2011, Cindy was inducted into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. In 2014, she was inducted into the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. And on top of all of that, she's a fantastic speaker and one of my favorite people on the planet. And I couldn't be more excited I get to have her back with me this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Cindy, how are you, my friend?
Good. Who the hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about you. You've done a lot.
An old fart.
Not in the least. I'm fantastic. Thank you. It was wonderful seeing you and Alan and our good friend Terry Hashimoto at the PGA Merchandise Show earlier this year. And congratulations for being recognized for your elite status in the game. Long overdue, in my opinion.
Well, that was pretty special. I was shocked. So I'm very thrilled. Thank you.
You're welcome. Cindy, I want to go back a little bit in your career, back to when you were on the Golf Channel's Big Break 3 Ladies Only. You had to do an interview to be considered as a potential participant on the show. And in that interview, you were asked why they should pick you. Do you remember what you told them?
Yeah. Now, why do you know? How do you know that?
I do research.
Did you see that interview?
I did.
You did not.
I did.
How'd you see that interview?
Again, I do research. I look around for things to see what's going on with you, what you've done and what you've achieved. I thought it was a very interesting response that you gave them for why you should have been on that show. Can you share that with us?
Well, I kind of think I told them off a little bit. I said, they wanted to know what I shoot. And I said, gee, that's funny. I just won the LPGA National Teaching Championship. I shot, I think I shot 72, 68, 71. And I kind of thought to myself, wow, Lord, that's amazing. Because I can shoot 85 just as fast as anybody, right? And then I said, keep your mouth shut. Shut up. Shut up. And then they said, you know, why should we pick, if there was a group of producers sitting here watching this interview, why should we pick you to be on the show? I said, I'll tell you why we should pick you. I said, I got news for you. There's probably not a whole lot of women watching your TV show. There's probably not a whole lot of watching your TV channel. And I'm married to a former tour player. I said something like that. And I don't know if I said I need to prove to myself that I can play. And I could be, I think I said, I could be the miracle story. I could be the light of the whole thing.
Indeed you did.
And you know what's funny? And you can't tell me there isn't a God, because there truly is. And after I lost on the show, Jay Kossoff came up to me and he gave me a big hug and he said, you were the light of the whole show. And that was a year after I had applied.
Wow. Was it really that long?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I almost started to cry. And the funnier part of it was, the reason I applied to be on the show was because, and we're probably going to get into this, but Alan didn't want to play anymore. And I was sitting in my sweatshop. I sewed shirts. I had an embroidery business, and I had made shirts for Augusta National for the Masters. And I was having a little bit of a pity party, and I was teaching lessons, and I was sewing all these shirts, and it was a Monday morning. I was reading the newspaper, and I looked at the sports page, you know, and all tour players used to do that when there wasn't the internet a lot. And I saw this list of the LPGA Legends Tour, and I'm like, what is this list, right? And I scanned the list, and I was like, what the heck? This is all my old buddies, and never knew there was a Legends Tour. And I saw Nancy Lopez shot 85 one round, and she made $3,000. I'm like, I can shoot 85, and I wouldn't get paid $3,000. So I picked up the phone, and I called the Legends Tour, and I asked if I could play. And they go, well, what number are you on the career money list? And I was like, oh, yeah, that list. And they said, well, you're going to have to qualify. I go, what do I have to do to qualify? Well, you got to go somewhere and you got to blah, blah, blah. And one shot, one person, blah, blah. I said, okay, fine. So I started practicing. And then I got this email from the Golf Channel about this show. And the little voice in my head said, you know, you should apply to be on this show. And I'm like, well, that's stupid. I don't want to win a lunch, you know, an exemption into an LPGA tournament. You know, I was 48 at the time. 47 or something. And I'm like, I can't play on the LPGA Tour. I don't hit it far enough. Yeah, but we both know that you want to win a tournament on the Legends Tour. We both know that if you were tied for the lead and had to hit a shot over water on the last hole with thousands of people watching you, you puke. You choke your guts out. You need to apply to be on this show so you can learn how not to choke. Okay, good point. So I applied to be on the show. I'm on the show. I get chosen. And I, the first tournament back, on the Legends Tour after the show, I came in third on the show. I get a sponsor exemption because everybody loved me on the show because I was a token old fart. And I birdied the 17th hole, the last round, and I walked to the 18th tee, tied for the lead, having to hit a shot over water with thousands of people watching. And the guy that had caddied for me every year before that grabbed my hand and he said, be brave, little girl, be brave. And I started to cry. And Alan goes, what are you doing? I go, nothing. And I'm like, oh, my God, slap yourself out of this, right? And so I'm like, oh my God, Lord, this is the exact same thing that you said to me a year ago. And so I get on the ATT and I had to hit the shot. And Alan goes, I think it's a fiber. And I'm like, I hate my fiber. He's like, this is anything but a fiber, right? I hit the shot on the green and Alan, I had it about 30 feet. And he goes, just lag this. Do not slap this putt by the hole. And I two putted for par and I'm sitting there and everybody went nuts because they knew who I was now, right? Before, nobody knew who I was. I was just a bum from Silver Creek. And so they all know who I was because I was just on the show and la-di-da, I'm tied for the lead. And then my buddy birdie 17 and she ends up winning by one. But the moral of the story is I defeated my demons and proved to myself the dream that I had when I was 17 years old. Be a star on the LPGA tour wasn't going to be a nightmare that would haunt me for the rest of my life. And I finished second on the money list that year. So I went from you're not good enough to be here to finishing second on the money list. So there you go. It's never too late to be what you might have been.
There you go. So let's take that a half a step further. Talk about defeating those demons because they haunted you for a long time in your career. They kind of chased you out of the game for a little while. And now all of a sudden you stand on top of the mountain, if you will. It was your own personal mountain. Didn't win the tournament, but it was good enough. Talk about how good that had to feel to know that everything that bothered you all those years was now dead.
Well, you know, what's funny is the tournament after that, I still wasn't the leader of the money list or second on the money list, but I won $32,500. The tournament after that, Barb Moxon, it was a team event, the BJ's Charity Classic. And it was a team event, and we ended up coming in seventh, and that's what made me be second on the money list. And the day after that, there was a pro-am. And this is so funny, because I'm writing a book right now. And I was doing this last night, because there's 18 chapters in the book. And the 18th chapter is me finishing second at this Hy-Vee Classic. And the pro-am after that, I'm standing on the tee box and it's packed with people. And Jan Stevenson's behind me. And it was so slow. I'm standing on the tee box and I'm getting ready to swing. And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder what she thinks of my golf swing. And after I hit the shot, I'm thinking to myself, Cindy, you just finished second on the money list. You beat her. You made more money on the Legends Tour money list. Why do you care what she thinks about your golf swing? But again, all those thoughts for all those years, right?
Yep.
Sometimes, you know, it takes a long time. Again, do you really care what she thinks about your golf swing? What do you care about the committee? The committee of they, you shouldn't care about the committee. But we grow up. You know, you're not good enough. You're too fat. You're too skinny. You're not smart enough to do that. And you got to change your subconscious mind. And it's funny, when we do boot camps, I make people, you know, name that bitch. Who is, you know, mine is Cynthia, right?
Yeah.
You know, look out. How many under are you? How much money are you going to make? You know, anyway, so sometimes it takes a long time to train that girl and that head of yours or that boy. Anyway, so I'm still trying to defeat some of those demons.
Let's stay with that theme. And as you alluded to a few moments ago that you said we'd probably get to this, we learned that Grayson Murray took his own life. Grayson was a wonderful player. He won out on the Korn Ferry Tour. He won twice on the PGA Tour, including this past January at the Sony Open. Grayson had some inner demons and wrestled with some substance abuse issues. I'm guessing that hit a chord with you and Alan. Alan found himself in a dark place like that, came close to ending his life. Do you mind sharing Alan's story?
Well, Alan, and it's funny because he shared a story just recently, and if anybody wants to hear it, it's an amazing story. And the PGA Tour Sirius Radio did an amazing job. And they shared a link. So if you go to my YouTube channel, Cindy Miller Golf, on YouTube, you can see Worth, the Alan Miller story, and you can listen to it. It was such a great job they did. Indeed. Anyway, Alan, when I listened to the story, I was like, wow, I didn't realize how good he was. I'm sure glad I asked him to marry me. I get three lessons for life. But Alan is we're totally different people, and he is a quiet, shy, diligent, reader of directions. And his whole life, he liked to, he's a ball striker. He's the second purest ball striker Dave Pelz has ever tested. So he had a dad that was a perfectionist. And Alan, you know, started to play golf and he got really good at it. And the funny thing is he took, lessons from Gordy Glenn's in Pensacola, Florida. And Gordy Glenn's ended up being a PGA Tour rules official. And Downing Gray was a guy that, you know, took him by the hand and taught him everything he needed to know. And Downing Gray, I don't know, what did Downing, he played in the Walker Cup team, captain of the Walker Cup team twice. And Alan just talked to him today. Alan talked to him on the phone today. And Downing's still alive. You know, I mean, all these guys were great. And they grew up in Pensacola and were and helped Alan. And anyway, so Alan played on two Walker Cup teams, a World Cup team, was number one or two amateur with Lanny Watkins. And his dad, you know, was always on him about, you got to be better, you got to be better. And he said, well, everybody makes mistakes. Well, you're not allowed to make mistakes. So that haunting voice ate at him. Aided him. And so he would drink for liquid courage. And when you get on tour and you're a shy person, you have to go to pro-am parties. Well, when you don't want to talk to anybody, you're going to have a couple drinks. So you got the courage to talk to people. Well, and needless to say, when we met, I'm from Buffalo and people from Buffalo know how to drink. And so when I went to the University of Miami, I met a guy at the Ratskeller. Every Friday we would play skins games with the golf teams, the boys and the girls golf teams. And there was a guy sitting at the bar named Dirtbag. Dirtbag was a professional gambler. And he would have $100 bills and he would buy shots for everybody. Well, I became good friends with Dirt. So Dirt says to me, he's one of Pat Bradley's sponsors. I'm like, you are so full of crap. And he said, no, really, I'm from New Hampshire. I'm really good friends with Pat Bradley. And one of my good friends, Alan Miller, is coming down to play at Doral. And I'm going to caddy for him and I'll introduce you to him. I'll get you a free ticket. I said, okay, great. So I meet Alan Miller, right? So long story short, every year Alan would come down and we were buddies. So we just became golf buddies. And finally I said, are we ever getting married? We never really even dated. So no, we were just golf buddies. And so it's so odd that he was just shy and quiet. And I don't think he ever really wanted to play on tour. And when he won a tour event, his dad said to him, you know, good job. Now you need to win another one and show him it wasn't a fluke. So nothing was ever good enough for him. And so he just didn't really even want to play anymore. And so when we got engaged, Vinnie Giles was his manager from Pros Inc. And Vinnie Giles was a big shot. He was a Walker Cupper. And he was on the Walker Cup team with Alan and a really good player. Vinnie Giles is still alive. And Vinnie came up to me. He looked me in the eyes. He goes, you're going to save this guy's life. And I go, no, what the hell are you talking about? And the best line of the whole feature that PGA Tour Series Radio did was, I knew how good Alan was, and he knew how bad I wanted to be good. And both of us, that made the perfect relationship. As sad or weird or awesome as that was, we became golf buddies.
And the next thing you know, you ask him to marry you, and he did.
Well, and I just said, are we ever getting married? He goes, why? You want to get married? I go, well, yeah. And he goes, okay, let's get married. And so we did. And I lost my card that year. And I really wasn't good enough to be out there. I mean, I was grinding my guts out. And I'm always better when I'm grinding. I mean, we are so opposite. We're so opposite. I'm like a Tiger Woods and he's an Ernie Els. And so we are now certified in behavior, motivation, judgment, and emotional intelligence. And that saved our marriage. I mean, we went to a seminar once and the woman was talking about how her husband drove her nuts. And I sat up and I'm like, yeah, I got one of them. And I couldn't get to the back of the room fast enough to buy her book. And I took the personality assessment for me and I took it for him. And I read off all of his weaknesses to him. And I had a delayed intelligence attack. And I said to him, you can't help yourself. I thought you acted like this on purpose just to drive me nuts. And again, you know, we do all these, you know, team building events for companies. We've done them for golf teams, you know, and it's funny. So Azahara Munoz, we did it for Arizona State University. And she loved Alan, you know, because she and Alan are like so much alike. And I'm like, I'm trying to talk to her. And she just blew me off. And she was just like, oh, my God, Alan's the best. And because she relates to him, you know what I mean? So it's just, you got to know who you are. And he didn't know who he was. And now he knows who he is. And now, that it, you know, again, he tried to commit suicide because he thought he was worthless. And nobody's worthless. So again, we're trying to share the story. What, honey? He what?
Failed.
He failed to death?
Failed.
He failed to death, he just said.
So yeah, what got Alan out of that? What got him from the depths of where he was to where he is now? Because my dealings with Alan, and I've had him on the show a couple of times, and then obviously I saw you guys down at the PGA Merchandise Show. He seems like a really happy guy, not the guy that we learned about in this special that Dave Marr did.
God, he said, knowing that, you know, God had a purpose for him and knowing who he is as a person and knowing that he doesn't need to drink and he's okay for him being who he is. And again, because when you think you have to be someone you're not, so you go out on tour and you think you got to hit it further and you got to think you've got, you go out there and you think you got to measure up to somebody else. He got out there being one of the best players in the world. Now he thinks he's got to change his game. Well, that's the stupidest thing you could ever do, but that's what he thought he had to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we are so adamant. If there's one thing, if anybody out there is listening, you got to know, especially parents of children, please don't push your children. Please don't push your children to be somebody they're not. Again, let your children be who they are. And we are so adamant about that. And we teach boot camps and we're, you know, I have a nonprofit, you know, the Pursue Your It Project, that you have to let your children learn who they are. So there's four different behavior styles and a lot of companies do this. And there's a high D. I'm a competitive control freak creep. That's who I am, right? And then there's a high I that never shuts up and they talk all the time and they're like, oh, hi, how are you? And you got to let that person be a motor mouth and they forget things and they don't ever shut up on the golf course. And then there's a high S, which is SETI, which is Alan. He just wants to hit balls over on the side by himself and he wants to be a ball striker. He doesn't care who wins. I'm like, are you kidding me? What do you mean you don't care who wins? I want to kick everybody's butt. And so... And then there's a high C who wants details and they want to know how far is that yardage and is the yardage from the front sprinkler or the back of the sprinkler. You got to know who you are. And if you don't know who you are and you don't have permission to be who you are, you're screwed. Because then you have to try to be somebody you're not. And so we teach a young girl, this is the saddest story in the world. And you used to teach this young girl and we kind of had a little, we told the father, who happens to be a doctor, just like Alan's dad, who's a control freak doctor. And we kind of said, you got to let her do what she needs to do. And he took her somewhere else for lessons. And the funny thing is, this doctor heard Alan's story. And he sent us a text 2 weeks ago. He said, holy cow, I absolutely love the story. God bless you both. I want you to know we love you. And I said, please have your daughter, and I named her, listen to the story. He said, not yet. And she's 14 right now. I didn't ask him. He said, not yet. And one of our other students, who now is not taking lessons anymore, played with this girl. And today, and her father needs to hear the story and let her daughter hear it. Hmm. And another student and their father came for a lesson today and said, this other girl who's not coming anymore played with this girl and her father, and they were screaming at each other on the golf course the whole time they played together. And I'm like, do you not realize that we could nonchalantly save your daughter's life?
Mm-hmm.
And again, but no one wants to hear it. And I'm like, do you have any idea what you're doing to your daughter?
No.
And that same dad and the daughter, I had another woman who was running a junior golf event text me and said, can you do anything about this dad and the daughter? They're screaming at each other. I said, I don't teach them anymore. I can't do anything. I mean, it's so sad.
Yeah.
Everyone's they're trophy hunting. And so, again, after the Grayson thing this weekend, I sent a message out on Pink Links on the Facebook group with all the LPGA pros. And I said, you know, please, guys, just have a listen to Alan's story and share it with parents of, you know, people that you're teaching. Please just share the story. Because, again, and I'm not trying to blame Alan's father. And Alan's forgiven his father. You know, he did what he needed to do, or, you know, he did what he thought was best. And Alan's forgiven his father. And Alan has not had a drink since 1996. And Alan is fine and great. And he's the best grampy in the world. And, you know, I'm so glad that he's fine. And our divorce never went through. And the funny thing is, I don't even remember why, but apparently we never even signed the papers. We didn't even know we didn't sign the papers. And 2 months after, I said, you know, let's not do this. And we found out we never even signed the papers, and they ripped the papers up. So we never got divorced, you know, even though we went to court. And thank God for all that, right? That was
right.
In 1998, right? And again, the funny thing is, again, I've got this it box, and there's three things in the it box: a nail, a mirror, and a seed. And the seed, the last time I went to the counselor, the Christian counselor, I'm sitting there crying and whining about Alan. And the tears are going down my cheeks, and the boogers are going in my mouth, and I don't have any Kleenex. And the guy gets up and he goes, let me go to the bathroom and get you some toilet paper. And he comes back in and he hands me the toilet paper, and he gives me the wad, and he goes, the Lord told me to tell you something. And I look up at him, and I go, oh, really? Like a little brat, right? I go, what'd he tell you? He said, Cindy, he told me to tell you that he's planted a seed in your life. And he told me to tell you, you need to stop digging it up to see if it's growing. You need to put this seed in the sunlight, and you need to water it, and you need to leave it alone and let it grow. And if you do, there's no telling how good this is going to end up. So leave the seed alone.
And how powerful is that?
Said, okay, I'll see you later.
Wow. That's amazing.
Right? And
yes.
Dominic DiStello emailed us in December and said, I used to work with your daughter at the Golf Channel. I'm at PGA Tour Series Radio. I read an article in Sports Illustrated from 1999 about Alan, and we would like to do a one-hour feature that would air during Mental Health Month in May. Would you be willing to do this story? And he came up to our house right before Christmas and was here for 10 hours doing this interview. I emailed Kelly, and she goes, Mom, that's the guy who trained me at the Golf Channel. And his boss used to be my boss at the Golf Channel. I mean, how small a world is this?
Right. And it's masterfully done. Dave Marr does an outstanding job of narrating the story.
Oh, my God. Wasn't it great?
Yes. He does an outstanding job of narrating the story. And the way that they have edited things together is just off the charts.
It was so good. So if anybody hears it and they want more information, you go to alanmillergolf.com/worth. But go to YouTube, Cindy Miller Golf's channel, and it's worth the Alan Miller story. So I just think it's a great story. It shows you that there's hope, and God bless Grayson Murray. And it's just, please, if you have trouble, I guess the suicide hotline is 988. But call someone if you're having trouble, because I am not a suicide counselor. But if you're having trouble, call the suicide hotline.
100%. Cindy, one more before I let you go, and I want to end this on a happy note. I read in high school, you played a little basketball and you swam, but you were also all county and all state in band, and you played the clarinet. You still play?
You know, I don't. And I was, we were going to have a reunion of, I don't know how many years, a million years, whatever. And I thought, oh, I'm cool. I'm going to get my clarinet, padded and all fixed up. So I went, spent all the money to get it fixed. And I tried to play a note and it went okay, I guess I suck. And I was so depressed because I was so excited. We were really good. Our band in Silver Creek was really good.
Yeah.
So I didn't do it, but I wanted to be a rock star, Chris. I really did.
Well, I think you are a rock star, just in a different way. You got a different instrument. You learned how to play and become a rock star at it. So that's how it goes. Cindy, before I let you guys go, remind our listeners, how can they stay up to date with all the great things that you're doing and follow you, whether it's on your YouTube channel, on your website, or on social media?
Cindy Miller Golf. Just look up Cindy Miller Golf.
Cindy Miller Golf, you are one of the outstanding people that you get to meet in this life. I can't thank you enough for letting us take the ride with you for the last half hour or so. You're just one of the great people that I've had the privilege of getting to know, and I hope I get this privilege of having you back on the show again soon.
You're pretty cool yourself. Thank you, honey. I love you.
I love you right back. My best to Alan and the family. We'll catch up soon.
Okay. Thanks, honey. Bye-bye.
See you, Cindy. That is the great Cindy Miller, folks, and I mean it sincerely. They don't come better than that lady. She has done so many wonderful things with so many players, since she has started to become a teacher. That happened many, many years ago. But she has made a difference in so many lives, between from the behavioral stuff and the Project IT. Please go look up that, because that's an immensely impactful program that she has put together. So you can find your IT, right? Why are you doing this? Kind of get to a realization for why you're doing what you're doing, and why it's important to you. And then you can build off of that, and who knows where your career and your life goes from there. She's a wonderful instructor. There's a reason why she's elite. And I can't thank her enough for being so wonderful to me and this show over the years. I want to get Alan to come on the show and tell his story as well, because go out there, please. Go out to Cindy Miller Golf on YouTube. Go watch or listen, I should say, to this special. Dave Marr does such a fantastic job narrating this story, and the story is so impactful, it's going to change lives. So please go out there and listen to it. And like I say, we'll get Cindy back on the show again soon. Coming up next is going to be Brian Finneran. Brian is a former Atlanta Falcons wide receiver. He was a Walter Payton Award winner in college, and he's become a wonderful broadcaster as well. Before I bring Brian into the show, I was talking with Eddie Dry, VP of Domestic Sales for Strixon Cleveland Golf, at the PGA Merchandise Show earlier this year. And I said, Eddie, I like your CBX full-face wedges. How can they help an average player like me play better? Here's what he had to say.
An average player, I use one, and I'm in some lies that you can't even believe. And I need all the help I can get. And the face is bigger, and the grooves go all the way up and all the way out to the toe. So if you hit it on the toe, you miss it, bam, there's a groove. So I like that. So I carry a 58.
There you have it, folks. Try the new CBX full-face wedges from Cleveland Golf. I also want to give a shout-out to my friends over at On Point Golf and their great On Point ball marker. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with On Point, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf, and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023, and they were using an on-point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. All right, now next on the tee with me is former Seahawks, Eagles, and Falcons wide receiver Brian Finneran. Let me remind you about Brian's background. He is from California, had a scholarship to play college football up at Oregon State, chose to go to Villanova instead because they offered he and his twin brother both scholarships to play there. And at Villanova during his senior season, he earned All-American honors, and he won the Walter Payton Award, which is given to the nation's top FCS Division I AA player. That season, he caught 96 passes for 1,389 yards and 19 touchdowns. In 2003, they retired his number 25, and in 2014, they inducted him into the Villanova Sports Hall of Fame. He was an undrafted free agent, signed by the Seahawks in 1999, played in the NFL from 1999 to 2010 with the Eagles and the Falcons. He also played over in NFL Europe for the Barcelona Dragons and was named All-NFL Europe. And over the course of his NFL career, he had 238 receptions for 3,093 yards and 19 touchdowns. Brian first joined us on the football side over on our show Thursday Night Tailgate, all the way back on episode number 8 in November of 2011. He's been a wonderful friend ever since, and I'm very excited I get to have him with me this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Brian, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Chris. How about yourself?
I'm fantastic. Thank you. Brian, we'll talk a little bit of golf later on in the show, but I want to start by getting some help from you to help me understand what the heck the Falcons are doing in the NFL draft. I mean, the last two seasons, I got to be honest with you, Finn, I'm scratching my head trying to figure out why a team that just signed Kirk Cousins to a four-year, $180 million contract with a $50 million signing bonus and $100 million guaranteed would go out and then draft Michael Penix with the 8th overall pick when you've got a defense that doesn't have a guy who's in the top 50 in sacks. I'm thinking, I'm not sure that's the need right now. Help me understand. What are they doing?
I wish I could help you out, Chris. I tried all my best to trick all my football knowledge from the years I played, whether it was high school or college or in the pros, and couldn't wrap my head around this one. I asked him to do one thing during this draft, and I said, this is before the draft. Please don't draft a quarterback. And what do they do with the 8th overall pick? Take Michael Penix. And it's not that I don't like Michael Penix. I think he could be a fine player. But the situation you just laid out, paying Kirk Cousins all that money and expecting him to be healthy and play for the next 2 years, to get an insurance policy on that move in the offseason and free agency, seems ludicrous to me if you're trying to win now. And you could have had one of the best receivers in the draft, which is what they've done the last few years, all offensive players. Or you could have the very best, what you thought would have been the very best in the top, the first defensive player taken off the board in this year's draft could have fallen right to the Falcons, and did for that matter, but decided to go with quarterback instead. So I had a tough time with it, Chris. I'm going to continue to have a tough time with it until I see it work itself out and something special happens. Maybe they know something that we don't know, but I did not like it for 1 second.
Yeah, and I scratched my head trying to figure it out. I mean, I've seen Raheem Morris talk about, you know, having short-term and long-term goals, and even if Kurt were to play out his four-year contract as a starter, they still see that as short-term. But it just seems like a lose-lose situation to me, because if Kirk goes out and plays well and the team doesn't make the playoffs, I mean, 2 years from now, Raheem Morris won't be the head coach anyway. I just don't think he has the luxury of looking long-term. The Falcons are a team that, by and large, have been 7-9 or 7-10 every season but one since 2018. He's going to be the third head coach over that period of time. To what you said a minute ago, they got to get better now. And I'm with you. I think Penix could be a really good quarterback. I just don't think they're going to be better now by picking him.
And what the heck did they tell Kirk Cousins during the courting process when he was a free agency for 2 hours, and they told him, you're the guy, we want you here, we're going to build this team around you, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And you go draft his succession plan, which could come 2 or 3 years later. I mean, the whole thing, it's going to be a very awkward quarterback meeting room. It's going to be a very funky situation inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium when the Falcons start playing. And God forbid Kirk Cousins has a couple bad picks or a couple bad games, or with the schedule that they have, when you go Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and somebody else to start the season. Oh, Kansas City, thank you very much. To start the season with that group, you go 1-2 or 0-3, you're going to tell me a city like Atlanta is not going to come up in arms and start looking for the guy behind the guy that just got free agency? I've seen this story before. It doesn't play out very well. It did for us, luckily, because it was Chris Chandler was the quarterback when I first got here to Atlanta, and Michael Vick was the first round draft pick. And when I tell you that fan base was torn and jaded, and they wanted the fresh, new, young, spunky, sporty Michael Vick, and it got ugly at times. So I just hope and pray it doesn't come to that. I hope Kirk Cousins plays well and they make the playoffs, and I guess Michael Penix just sits back and waits his time for the next couple of years.
Then if you even go back to the 2023 draft, when they drafted Bijan Robinson in the first round, at a time in the game's history when the running back position has been devalued, it's a passing league now, and you already had a guy like Tyler Algier that you drafted in the fifth round in 2022. That guy goes out and rushes for over 1,000 yards, 4.9 yards per carry in 22. And then you take Robinson in the first round. Again, so many other positions this team is needed. I feel like they keep drafting a position that isn't of need in the first round. I feel like they're throwing first round picks away.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I can feel it coming out of your voice, and hopefully you can feel it out of mine too. I the more I think about Bijan, I'm not as upset as I am about the Kyle Pitts pick, because Kyle, he's a nice football player, and they called him a unicorn coming out of Florida, but he's kind of almost like positionless. He's not a tight end. He's not a receiver. He's like a hybrid mixture of these two things, and Arthur Smith, the coach from last couple few years, barely used him in the run game except to like a wide block and try to seal a defensive end, and never went behind him, which because he couldn't because he's not a power blocker. So it's a funky deal. Plus, on the board at the time was Michael Parsons, to your point. Guys we passed over that are staring us right in the face that we have not taken. So it's all revisionist history. We can try to throw away the last 3 years of 7-10 and the last 6 years of not making the postseason and hope to God that they get it right this time. I like Raheem Morris. I do. Terry Fontenot's growing on me. It's got to start coming together, though, and it's got to start happening this year.
Switching gears a little bit over to the baseball world, and I think everybody celebrated today the news of Angel Hernandez, perhaps the worst umpire in the history of the world, retiring. No one ever got it wrong more than he did. And your thoughts, are you happy to see that guy go, or is he a sports talk radio gift that just kept on giving every day?
No, he's a frustration from behind the plate constantly in every game he was in, pretty much. There's a funny story. One of my teammates over at 680 The Fan, Buck Ballou, who played minor league baseball, he's a starting quarterback for the 1980 Georgia Bulldogs and also played baseball over there and got a little professional baseball career in the minor leagues. He was at a game. His mom and dad had drove down a couple hours from wherever they were in Valdosta. And Angel Hernandez is behind the plate in the top of the first inning or bottom of the first inning. Buck Ballou gets rung up on a pitch that was so far outside the strike zone. He looked back at Angel Hernandez at the time. You're talking 35 years ago. And said to Angel Hernandez, he goes, wow, boy, you and I are both going to die down here in the minor leagues. You keep making calls like that. And he got thrown out of the game. His parents drove 3 hours to see him. So it was a funny story. But Angel Hernandez has not stopped making bad calls since he got Buck Ballou rung up and thrown out of the game back in whatever, 1985.
Right. I saw that you reposted a hilarious basketball video that is spot on about carrying the ball and traveling in the NBA, and it never gets called. You've played a lot of basketball. How often are you screaming at the TV that guy just traveled?
Oh, constantly. I did it today. I did it. I was actually tuned in. I don't do this very often, Chris, but I tuned in a little WNBA because the Fever taking on the Sparks, I think. So got a little Caitlin Clark action, and one of the girls on the team was posting up and spun around and picked up her pivot foot and tried to take a shot. I was like, oh my God, it's even happening here. The fundamentally sound women's basketball game going sideways too. But it's impossible to play the game, and it's hard for me to enjoy it like I used to. The flopping, the traveling, the carrying of the basketball, it's like the rules have gone out the window and fundamentals are dead, and they're just great giant athletes running up and down the court making shots. So I've kind of lost the love for the NBA. I'm excited to watch Kyrie and Luka tonight, see if they can pull this thing off and sweep the series. And then I do think Boston and Dallas would be a great, this year would be a great finals.
Going on the back-to-back stories of Angel Hernandez and traveling, not getting called in the NBA, it just seems like officiating across the major sports is just awful. Like, what happened? I thought you had to earn your way up. And I thought they were doing things like grading umpires and grading referees so that we got the best of the best. It feels like none of that is really true.
Yeah, I think that's an extreme, but you're on to something. There's something's got to change. Plus, the rules are changing every year, too, and they're trying to make it better for football, and quarterbacks can't get touched. Remember the sack Grady Jarrett had a couple years ago down in Tampa Bay on Tom Brady? That pretty much ends the ball game, but they call it roughing the passer, which was insane and just hard to deal with. You take away, first of all, you take a sack away from a great football player. You take a win away again from a team that is trying to win the South Division, and you don't think about it very much, but plays like that affect livelihoods. So to your point, Chris, they got to start getting it right more often, because you got guys that are getting called out on strikes that aren't strikes. You got guys that are getting sacks and not getting sacks, and the whole thing's going sideways. So hopefully it cleans up a little bit and they can figure out what the heck's causing all this.
Your thoughts, speaking of rules and rules changes, the proposed new kickoff rule. What are your thoughts on this thing?
I'm kind of excited about it. I played every special team when I was in the NFL for the 10 years I played. I played offense. I did play a little defense on Hail Mary situations. And I played punt return, punt coverage, kickoff, and kickoff return. I love being on the football field. And I think this will open up some more windows and avenues for people to make plays and big plays in the kickoff return game. It's going to be tough. It'll be fascinating to watch how the special teams coordinators decide who they want on the field now, what type of players they want. Do you want receivers kind of stock blocking? Do you want safeties and corners because they're a little quicker, can move a little bit more? I'm sure it'll be a fair bit of all those guys, running backs and tight ends and linebackers. But with that close proximity, if you come out of your lane just a little bit and that returner gets a full head of steam, watch out, because you're going to see some touchdowns this year. So I'm excited about it. Bring a little more action and fun in the game.
Let's talk a little bit of golf. And I was curious to find out, how long have you been playing? When did you start playing the game?
I probably took it up fairly seriously when I got in the NFL. My dad was a good golfer growing up, but he never pushed it on us. And I guess he figured, since we were playing soccer and basketball and baseball and swimming and everything else, he figured he'd just leave golf out of it. So I was not happy with Pops for not putting a golf club in my hand at an early age, but I'm coming around a little bit now since I've been playing about, 20 years?
I'm guessing you've been in a fair number of celebrity events and charity events. Sure. I know Warwick Dunn does a really great thing here. Terrell Buckley's got a big event coming up here pretty soon. Talk about some of your favorite events that you've gotten to be a part of.
Warwick does a great job. He has one coming up in June. I just got a text from him this evening, so I'm going to try to make that. Used to do a couple different events here locally that Kevin Butler and I, a little kicker for the Chicago Bears. We live in the same neighborhood, so we've gotten together on a couple different charitable opportunities here and there. It's really, Austin Riley started one the last couple years, Chris. That's been really, really nice. Does a great job for Team Red, White, and Blue, RWB. And they do nice things for veterans as far as taking care of them, make sure they have a good quality life to live after they're done serving their country and doing the things they're doing. So, and then the Mitsubishi Electric Classic comes to the neighborhood here, and I have gotten an opportunity to play as a celebrity on the back end of that thing a couple times. Once with Drew Butler, old punter, and Kevin's son from the Arizona Cardinals in Georgia. And then one of the most enjoyable times, I got a chance to yuck it up with Vince Carter at that event a few years ago as well. So the opportunities to help people, give 4 or 5 or 6 hours, depending on how many people are there, it's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, and I just got back from Mansfield Oil. I had one down at Doral, at Trump National Doral. So I hadn't had a chance to play the Blue Monster, so we got a chance to do that. So fortunate to get an opportunity to go play those courses, but also to have an impact on people's lives that need our help.
Speaking of courses, what are some of your favorites? I imagine you've played in some really cool places. We've got a lot of really great courses in and around the state of Georgia, but where are some of your favorite places that you've had an opportunity to tee it up?
Yeah, Sugarloaf's been awesome here locally in my home course. Golf Club of Georgia, and what Ben Caney has done over there, and at Horseshoe Bend has been spectacular with the cleanup process he did over there. Peachtree's great. East Lake has been awesome to get a chance. I always enjoy playing those courses where you get to watch it on TV every year, and to see East Lake and say, oh yeah, I was in that bunker. Oh, I hit it to that green one time, and whatever else. And then obviously my favorite golf experience was Augusta National. I got to go down.
Really?
It was heaven on earth. I wish we had more time. Maybe next time I come on, we'll really describe it to you. But when I tell you, I got to go down. So Porter Payne, Billy Payne's son, and I became pretty good friends. And he gave me the invite. And we met him at Waffle House just outside the club and drove down Magnolia Lane. Put our suitcase and stuff in the cottages over there, just to the left of 10. And proceeded to go grab some breakfast and quick little snack, and then hit the course for 18, grabbed a drink, played the 9-hole course after that, spent the night, had dinner, got a tour of the wine cellar, had some cigars and scotch on the caddy's nest, and then played another 18 the next day. Are you kidding me? It was unbelievable. One of the best experiences of my life.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So now I got to live vicariously through you. What's it like driving up Magnolia Lane?
It's just as special as you can imagine. Pretty gorgeous. Even in the time of year, it was a little bit chilly when we were out there, but just absolutely phenomenal. And then everybody so pleasant. If you go out there and complain about one thing, you need to be taken out the property and shoved in a trash can, because you are the grouch.
No doubt. And you're on the first tee. Tell me, what's it like to put a peg in the ground on the first tee at Augusta National?
Super nervous. Really kind of neat and special, obviously. Billy Payne, the chairman of Augusta National, is behind us, and he's whining about his son and the white pants his Porter's wearing. And then I teed it up and took a couple deep breaths and put it in the up on the left side, up in the pine straw up there, and I don't know, probably proceeded to make double bogey on the first hole and just get the hell off that green and go to the next hole.
Wow. That's the dream right there, my friend. I don't know that it would ever get any better.
I was walking, and I apologize, I don't know the name of the bridge. It's the one that leads from the 13 tee box at the end of Amen Corner across the bridge onto the fairway. And I stepped on this big magnolia leaf, and as we were walking, I noticed it. So I kind of kicked it off with my club and left it there. And I walked another 15 or 20 yards, and I looked back, and the only thing in that freaking fairway was that giant magnolia leaf I just left back there. I literally felt like I littered on the course. That's how immaculate and pristine that place is.
How'd you putt the greens?
Not bad. Not bad. The second day I birdied 12 and 16.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, had a nice round there, probably shot in like the mid to high 80s, which is kind of where I live now. I'm not a great golfer, but we'll have a good time, and I'll have a bunch of bogeys and get my quota for birdies, which is about one.
Well, that's awesome. To be able to say that I birdied 12 and I birdied 16, that's good enough. Who cares what else you shot?
No doubt.
Brian, before I let you go, remind our listeners, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing? Listen to your show on 680 The Fan and follow you on social media as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Appreciate it. Always enjoy being on with you, Chris. So at BFan86 on Twitter and Instagram. And then our radio show is on in the mornings here in Atlanta. But you can tap that app, download the app at 680thefan.com, and listen from 6 to 10 or the entire day if you want. And you can go back and listen to yesterday's shows or whatever. They have some podcasts up there as well. So I've enjoyed doing it. I can't believe I'm doing it for almost 13 years now. And it's outlasted my football career, which is pretty cool as well. So I've enjoyed doing it. And it's been a lot of fun here in Atlanta.
Brian, you're the best, my friend. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of this show. As I said at the top, you were on episode number 8 back in 2011. So this show has just gone over the 800 episodes. So
that is crazy. That's pretty cool. I got the chills thinking about it.
I appreciate that.
Well, congratulations to you too. You do a great job and make everybody feel super welcome and comfortable.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Brian, take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. I hope we get this privilege of catching up with you again soon.
Just say the word, buddy. I'll be there.
I appreciate you. See you, Brian.
Bye.
That is the great Brian Finneran, folks, and just a wonderful guy, as you could tell from the conversation. And the guy is just so well-rounded. He knows so much about all sports. It's not just football. And to think that now he was out there at Augusta National and doing all of that, I am so jealous. That is the dream right there, and he got to live it to the fullest. I mean, the whole nine, up Magnolia Lane and staying in the cabins and playing, you know, 36 holes over 2 days and cigars and the scotch and the whole nine and having dinner. Wow, what a wonderful thing. We're going to talk more detail about that next time around, even if we just talk about it again, because it gives me chills thinking what a great time he must have had doing that. Be sure to follow him at BFin86 on social media. Check out his show on 680 The Fan, 680thefan.com is where you can find that as well. And we'll catch up with Brian a little bit later on, maybe late this summer, early fall. We'll talk more football. We'll certainly talk more about the time at Augusta National and some more golf as well. Brian is fantastic. Look forward to catching up with him again soon. All right, that's it for part one of this week's show. My sincere thanks to Cindy Miller and Brian Finneran for joining me. Stay tuned because part two of the show will come out in a couple of days. It's going to feature Robert Morris University men's golf coach Steve Schindeldecker and top 100 instructor Eric Johnson. And it should be a barn burner because those two guys went to the same high school and played against each other as well. So they've known each other for 100 years. So it's going to be a lot of fun when they both join the show. Folks, I can't thank you enough for continuing to make Next on the Tee a part of your weekly golf content. Until next time, hit 'em straight, my friends.